The following radio program is for informational purposes only and is neither specific nor tailored financial advice to any individual. It is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any financial instrument. Always do your own due diligence and consult a financial advisor before making any investments. Investing involves risk, which can result in the loss of any or all principal. Peter Weitz is a registered investment advisor with Fusion Analytics Investment Partners, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor, as well as a registered rep with Fusion Analytics Securities, LLC, a FINRA-registered broker-dealer and SIPC member. All views expressed in this program are those of the host or guests and do not reflect the opinions of Fusion Analytics Investment Partners nor its affiliates. Your investments. How secure are you that they are secure? Do you want to know more about investing, retirement, and moving to the next level in business? Welcome to In Black and Whites, featuring host Peter Weitz. Our program will answer all of the questions about your future and so much more. It's all about smart business and smarter investing. Now, here is your host, Peter Weitz.
Hi, thank you. Welcome to the program. I am Peter Weitz. You're listening to In Black and Whites. Just wanted to make a quick announcement. I was talking to my guest, who I'll introduce in just a moment, prior to us going on the air today. And I was saying that, you know, last week we had a conversation about how to pick a stock. And one of the things that we were talking about is preparation. And we're saying expect the best, but prepare for the worst. And so with that in mind, I want you to know that here at the world headquarters of the In Black and Whites radio program today, they are testing the fire alarm system, and I'm just hoping that they decide to not test it during the next hour. And I've asked my assistant to pay the fire marshal handsomely to go test somebody else's alarm first, but I wanted to point that out. Anyway, welcome to the program. We have a really interesting show today. It's going to be based more about retirement planning. And for those of you that follow my blog, inblackandwhites.com, or follow me on Twitter at Peter Weitz, you'll know that 401k planning is near and dear to my heart, and it's really the primary focus of my business practice. And you've seen over the last several months, and in fact, probably the last 18 months in total, significant changes in the 401k landscape, particularly as it relates to regulation and what the requirements for HR leaders, chief financial officers, and trustees of corporations have to do to be able to act in the proper fiduciary capacity on behalf of their employees. So I'm going to be joined today by a really prominent ERISA attorney who's also a good friend and a great third-party administrator. And we're going to talk about some of these issues and some of the things that plan trustees and plan sponsors can do to mitigate the fiduciary responsibilities as they embark on this new journey of additional government regulation. Before I get started, I think it's important just to note that the timing of this show is actually pretty interesting. If you read my blog, you'll notice last week there were two posts on there from a recent study that was done by the Retirement Advisor Council. And basically that study suggests and supports that the most successful 401k plans have a team of advisors that they use to enhance the quality of the plan. And that's particularly financial advisors such as myself and trusted third-party administrators, such as my guest, who I'll introduce in just a couple minutes. Some of the outcomes of that, and by the way, they did survey over 400 employers, that professional advisors enhance participant retirement outcomes. They help boost contribution levels. And they assist in implementation, fiduciary process, support, due diligence, education. So the study was actually pretty encompassing, and I think it's nice timing based upon where we are today in light of today's show, because we're going to specifically focus in on that and things that you need to do, our listeners need to do, in order to be able to have the most successful 401k plans out there for your employees. So with that, let me give a brief introduction to our today's guest. His name is John Starr, and he's the president of My Benefits and First Party Administrators, LLC. He's been a retirement plan professional for over 26 years. His professional background experience includes comprehensive understanding of plan markets, plan design, plan operations, participant and sponsor communications, and advice. He began his career as a tax professional with Ernst & Young, He attended the University of Dayton School of Law and later attended University of Florida's Master of Law and Tax Program. He practiced for over 8 years with a large ERISA-related law firm. And then he became Wachovia Bank's Employee Benefits Plan, ESOPs, and 401k Plans leader. For several years, he worked for a couple of different banks, including RBC. And then he became the retirement plan manager for the Southeast for Merrill Lynch for a period of 7 years. Immediately after that, he started his benefits company, in which he runs today out of Atlanta, Georgia. So with that, I'd like to welcome to the show John Starr. John, thanks for being on the program.
Well, absolutely. You can also call me Fire Marshal John because I appreciated the extra payoff.
Oh, good. I'm glad you took care of him for me.
Absolutely. Don't worry.
We'll know when that bell goes off. So a little bit of a history. You know, there's been some pretty interesting regulations that were passed, significant regulation passed last July, or actually July of 2012, the ERISA 408B2. And it was a pretty much a landmark decision because it was based upon something that happened all the way in the Supreme Court. And what I want to do is I want to talk about a little bit about the history of why 401k plans are becoming so much more heavily scrutinized than they were in the past, and why employers have to take such a strong priority into making sure their plans have the best of the best design, the best investments, the best advisors, the lowest fees, and so forth. So give me a brief history, John, of what drove the government to enacting this really landmark legislation, 408B2.
Well, you know, it really goes back to Speaker of the House Boehner and back with the Pension Protection Act. I mean, he drove significant changes in the employee retirement plan world, and the real issue has been, and the government's legitimate concern is that employees really don't have adequate savings to get to their retirement goals. And with Social Security, we've heard about all the concerns and worries about Social Security. And so the government really tried to step in to create, first of all, with Pension Protection Act, a means for employees to save. And then the concern became, because of some case law and some other just overall concerns, that employees really didn't understand, nor employers, really the total fees they were paying in their plans. So after a bunch of different hearings and legislation, they came up and codified what we all knew under ERISA was an affirmative obligation of a plan sponsor to basically check and do due diligence on their cost of their plan. And they expanded that due diligence requirement not only back to the plan sponsor, but also over to the participants. So participants would have a clear objective level of understanding all the fees associated with their plans. Because again, fees are a factor to overall performance in a retirement plan, and participants not understanding that left them really in the dark as to the direction of how to invest or what those investment costs actually were for themselves.
And so, I hear this a lot in our industry that, if people don't see expenses inside of their plan, they don't exist. And obviously all of these companies that are out there are not non-for-profit companies. They're putting their names on, football stadiums and so forth. They're obviously making money. I mean, is that what sort of would drove it? Was that the impetus? Was that out of sight, out of mind, and people needed to see?
Yeah, absolutely, Peter. I mean, if we started really talking to the different providers, the Fidelities and all the rest that are out there, and really ask them what it costs to record keep a plan, I mean, I haven't seen anybody tell me that it costs less than $80 a participant. When you hear numbers like that, and some of them, one large provider told me it was nearly $200 for them per participant. Well, there aren't too many employers who, walk voluntarily into the retirement plan space thinking, I want to spend $200 an employee just to administer my retirement plan. So the mutual fund industry, saw the advantage, obviously, of long-term dollars, but also saw that, by having a retirement plan provider like a Fidelity, Hartford, Mass Mutual, having one of those type of firms out there doing the record keeping for them, well, that meant that instead of having 5 million trades at a particular mutual fund in a day, they'd get one net trade on a fund. Well, so for a mutual fund company, not having 5 million trades versus one is a substantial savings. So the fund industry has basically takes part of their expense ratio and uses those dollars to support those record keeping costs. And they, you'll see it now in these, in the 404A5 notices to participants as well as to the plan sponsors. You'll see things that say sub-transfer agent revenue or servicing revenue, as well as the 12B1 revenues. Those dollars are used by the providers to help offset those substantial record-keeping costs to run the plan, and oftentimes also support financial advisors and others to service the plan.
And I suppose because of those disclosures, there's really nothing wrong with revenue sharing, is there?
No, in fact, there's nothing wrong with it. It's when we look at, Peter, when we look at an expense ratio for a mutual fund, let's say it was 1.25%. Well, when I look at that expense ratio, that's what a participant oftentimes in the A share, which is, you know, typically one of the highest share classes you can get outside of institutional plans. You know, that A share, that 1.25%, if I walk into a financial advisor's office right now, normally I would pay a load for that. A front-end charge, and then my rate of return would be net of that 1.25%. So if I'm a regular retail investor outside of these front sales charges, you know, 1.25% is, you know, my expense ratio. If I'm inside of a retirement plan, well, 1.25% is the same expense ratio that I'm experiencing. But what I'm getting is all the other benefits. Someone's record keeping it. You know, I get all these statements and all these other things to help me plan for my retirement education. So there's nothing wrong with that revenue sharing because it's the same number as if you walked into any other financial advisor's office or went directly to the mutual fund company. So it's the same number. It's just how the number is, what's underneath that number to help support all the systems and technology, and driven for one thing, to help a participant really plan and accomplish the retirement goals. So same effect, same number, but it's just being utilized to help support it. And the mutual fund companies give up these dollars simply so that, you know, participants and plan sponsors can have an easy way to invest and save.
And that's interesting because, you know, a lot of times we just hear that, you know, why do I have to pay all these costs? You know, why does it cost so much? But essentially, I mean, you're paying for the professional people that are helping manage your plan.
Well, right on. You're not only paying for it, but it's the same thing you would have paid all on your own. In fact, most of the time, much less, because, you know, normally, as you know, if you walk in and try to buy a mutual fund, oftentimes there are some form of sales charge for just buying it on your own. In this scenario, you don't pay the sales charge, and you're getting all the benefits of all the systems and technology and people. And, you know, planning for retirement is hard. It's not easy. And it requires real experts to help that individual and help that plan sponsor help their participants really accomplish their goals. Even just simple things, Peter, like getting someone to put money into the retirement plan. So, you know, I mean, Barry, you were talking about what's a successful retirement plan. Well, one of those topics certainly is getting an employee to save some of their own money so they can oftentimes take advantage of the match from their employer or just to have some additional dollars to help them reach their retirement goals. Well, that takes some real time. And so we created things like automatic enrollment and auto increase to help make that simple, even auto investing. All those are really substantial tools. So, you know, those tools have lots of administrative time and expense and resources to apply to make it easy for the participant. Because at the end of the day, the participant just needs to, you know, wants to save and have some help getting to their goals. The plan sponsor wants to make this thing super simple for their employees to do those things as well, so that everybody's aligned for one goal. What I don't see, and you know, the challenge I think about these the codification of all these notices is that, I mean, that looking at all those numbers doesn't help you get there too easily either. You have to really analyze the numbers as a participant. So you still need to turn to your financial advisor or your retirement plan expert and help you figure out what all those things mean for your particular retirement goals.
And we're going to dig deeper into that in just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program. I'm your host, Peter Whites, on Voice America Business.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With one out of every four 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Weitz and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions using three proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost. Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. In Black and Whites, we win by not losing.
Stephen Douglas Associates, delivering talent, impacting results. Now celebrating 30 years of bringing top talent to some of the nation's most recognizable companies and private equity firms, whether they need highly qualified executives permanently or on a project basis. Recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing companies in America in 2012 and 2013. To learn more, visit us at www.stephendouglas.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Weitz or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter at inblackandwhites.com. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email peter at inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hey, thanks. Welcome back. I'm your host, Peter Weitz, on In Black and Whites. Prior to the break, we were talking with our guest, ERISA attorney and industry expert John Starr, about the regulations that were passed almost 2 years ago relating to fees and the disclosure of fees for participants. But I kind of want to change gears a little bit going forward, and I want to talk about the role of fiduciary inside of a 401k plan. And if you actually read the legislation, it says that, and this legislation was passed in July of 12, it said the rules governing every 401k and every private pension plan in the United States changed. The primary service providers to these plans, trustees, advisors, investment managers, record keepers, and other fiduciaries must provide new fee disclosures to their plan clients, or else the contracts will no longer be reasonable arrangements, and they will be exempted from ERISA's prohibited transaction rules. So what does that mean? I want to focus on the word fiduciary. And John, I'm hoping you can define for me exactly who a fiduciary is.
Well, you know, the ERISA makes it fairly clear, and I'll say fairly. So we know every qualified retirement plan has at least two named fiduciaries, named meaning identified in the plan. So one named fiduciary is always the plan administrator, and the other named fiduciary is the trustee. So those are the two named fiduciary. So a plan administrator has all the incumbent duties to ensure, and we'll go into more detail, but all the incumbent duties to relative to the plan document, ensure that it's in compliance, that all the provisions in the plan are followed, that loans, distributions, et cetera, all those pieces are being properly handled. That's the plan administrative function. And then the trustee has the duties relative to the actual underlying investments. Those are prudent expert standards that apply to these fiduciaries. So you're supposed to be an expert in delivering both pieces, being either trustee or plan administrator, very often, you know, it's a funny thing in this space. There's one other person who sometimes gets labeled as a fiduciary, and there's an awful lot of discussion about it these days, Peter, which is an investment advisor, is a financial advisor, someone who's talking to the participants, are they a fiduciary or not? And so that part of our industry wants to say that a financial advisor is a fiduciary. Other parts of our industry want to say a financial advisor isn't. So we'll see some things this coming summer where we'll have a little more clear identification. But if you take over any of those roles by giving direct advice to a participant or a plan sponsor, for example, around the investment menu or investment selection, you may, in fact, make yourself a fiduciary. So there's plenty of ways to get swept into this and plenty of ways not to be swept into it. But
yeah, and I advise my clients, John, that and I say the same thing, that anybody that's involved in the investment selection, whether you're on an investment committee or not, which includes myself, is essentially deemed to be a fiduciary.
Yep, and I think that's that is the right word choice, deemed fiduciary.
And so that means that we have to take some additional precautions in mind, because we're acting in that capacity. And, you know, by definition, I think it's important, and I want to make this clear to the listeners, that the fiduciary has a responsibility to act on the best interests of the participants and not the best interests of the corporation for which they work.
Solely in the best interest of the participants.
And I think that's interesting, because in the past, that may not have been the case, correct?
ERISA's been around for a long time. It's always been the case. What hasn't happened is some of the 408 and 40485 created some additional fiduciary liabilities on a plan sponsor. But I mean, frankly, no, that's always been the standard. So it's what we've seen is that the law has evolved, plan sponsors have evolved, DOL has focused. And, you know, that means that these roles get more scrutiny and more attention. But they've been there since ERISA was law.
And so, interestingly, let's scare our listeners a little bit, John. If you follow
– That's plenty scary.
Yeah, here's some data, okay, and some of the stuff that I've seen, that the Department of Labor is going to hire 17,000 auditors to start looking at 401k plans to make sure they're in compliance with – ERISA 408B2 and 404. Number two, if you actually look at it, that's 680,000 basically retirement plans in the United States. So that's 35 or so plans per auditor if you follow the data. Now, I know people can make, and this is not a political show, John, arguments about how government workers can be lazy and all that. But if I only had to audit 35 plans, that's a pretty light year. So the likelihood of them getting to you is pretty good. And so if you follow this legislation, it says that if you're found liable, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, and please pipe in, that it is a personal liability and not a corporate one. So the trustees of the plans can actually be liable on a personal level.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, and it's joint and several liability. So if you and I are on the plan and you do bad acts and I don't, I'm just as liable as you are. So that's we see really, you know, funky things sometimes. Like, you know, if you're sitting on the investment committee of your retirement plan, well, you know, everybody around you is equally as liable as you are and individually liable. That's a real liability. There's other scary things too. Well, how about being the plan administrator? Well, you know, most plan sponsors identify their own company or practice as a plan administrator. So 100% of the liability lays on that plan sponsor and then on those individual employees who are on those committees or named as a trustee. Big stuff. And I've seen some horrible cases. That, you know, really can directly impact people's, you know, financial well-being.
Do you have an example of one of those?
I do. I mean, I had, you know, I'll just give a unique example. It was a nursing home chain, and I got brought into this at the back end. Long story short, nursing home chain, and they decided, hey, you know, we spend money and time with our systems to help administer this retirement plan. So we're going to allocate some of our costs for our computer system and personnel to the plan. And then one of the owners liked to sit at a funky little restaurant, and his buddies would walk in and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, getting some medical device equipment. Would you lend me some money? And he said, well, sure, I'll lend it from the retirement plan. So they did a series of things, but there was never a loan document. There was never, you know, arm's length transaction, and the loans didn't get paid. The cost allocations, you know, those are not prohibited. So after about a 32-page Department of Labor prohibited transaction letter, they lost 7 of their nursing homes and permanently barred from ever being a fiduciary on a retirement plan. I think they were more concerned, frankly, about the losing 7 of their nursing homes. So real live stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, we're going to talk significantly about what some of the plan or plan administrators, trustees can do to help mitigate some of their responsibility under ERISA a little bit later on in the show. But I think it's real interesting to note that it's a pretty serious piece of legislation and some of the rules that are out there. And, you know, I've said in the past, John, that, you know, the 401k, if you go to a chief financial officer of a company or the head of HR, the 401k was number 75 on the list of priorities things to think about during the day. And with what's going on now, it's got to be top 5.
Well, I mean, let's go back to what you were just talking about, where we were talking about joint and several liability. Guess who usually is the named trustee on those plans? Well, that chief financial officer. So number 75 is a direct federal level liability to that CFO who signs their name down as a trustee. So while it's number 75, their liability is number 1.
Yeah, and that's interesting. And that's, you know, I think a great time for us to take a break, John, because I want to focus pretty much the balance of the show on things that we can do to help mitigate some of that liability. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program on Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Stephen Douglas Associates, delivering talent, impacting results. Now celebrating 30 years of bringing top talent to some of the nation's most recognizable companies and private equity firms, whether they need highly qualified executives permanently or on a project basis. Recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing companies in America in 2012 and 2013. To learn more, visit us at www.stephendouglas.com.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With 1 out of every 4 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Weitz and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions using 3 proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost. Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. In Black and Whites, we win by not losing.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Whites or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter@inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email peter@inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hey, thanks. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Peter Whites. We are joined today by John Starr, an ERISA attorney and industry expert. And we're talking about the importance of fiduciary management inside of 401k plans and why the government has put such a big focus from a compliance and a legislative pinpoint, why they put such a big focus on the importance of plans. You know, I saw a piece of data, and I'm just going to read it out to you. It came from the National Institute on Retirement Security, and it said that 69% of the 16,000 retirees in the 15 countries they surveyed between July of 2012 and April of 2013 said that the best financial advice they ever received was to start saving for a retirement at an early age. And it goes on to say that 38 million of the 84 million American households, that's 45% of the American households, that are headed by working age people, in other words, people that are not retired, do not own any pre-tax retirement accounts such as a 401k or an IRA. 45%. So it's an amazing number. And when you think about it, John, you know, we're trying to convince people to save for retirement and put their, you know, put together plans, design plans that are built around the best chances to accumulate the most amount of money for retirement. And I think the government's right by putting together this legislation to force the hand of employers to make them want to do the right thing. And I think these numbers support that.
Yeah, right on. And, you know, and Peter, I my experience has been consistently that, you know, employers do want to do the right thing, that they're sincerely interested in it. You know, the problem is, you know, open up a plan document. It's 100 pages long. And then there's an adoption agreement oftentimes, that's another 30 or 40 or 50 pages long. But that's an awful lot of heavy-duty technical detail with lots of references to Internal Revenue Code sections and ERISA. I mean, you know, how does anybody working at an employer know how to handle or interpret any of that language? That's super, super hard and very complex.
And I think that sort of walks into what I want to talk about next. And, you know, since the onset of 408B2 back in July of 12, there's been a significant increase in the number of lawsuits filed by participants inside of 401k plans. And I think they're suing over, or if you look at the successful lawsuits, they're over process. You know, the Supreme Court ruled many years ago that they're not going to make decisions on market performance of investments inside of a 401k plan because it's not their jurisdiction. But they certainly can rule on not having a process in place acting in the best interests of a fiduciary. And I think that's where this whole industry is headed, is to what's your process. So walk me through, John, you know, what some of that litigation supports with regards to lack of process. You know, what should we be looking for?
Well, so Peter, I think it comes in two different directions, right? So, you know, the first direction is the one that seems like the one everybody wants to talk about, which is the investment liability. So just as you said, I mean, being a prudent expert doesn't mean you had the highest performing fund or the lowest cost fund in your plan. It means that a prudent expert, you know, under similar circumstances would have, through a process of investing, would have chosen that fund. Well, in most retirement plans, it's pretty hard on a standard plan to do it wrong. The plaintiff's bar has not too much interest in the area of suing plan investment fiduciaries because there's no damages. So what they get in a damage suit over investment menus are really, if it was not a prudent investment choice, it's the difference between what the fund actually earned and what a prudent investment choice would have earned. So that's why you really don't see much in the way of litigation around investment choices unless you're talking about large providers. For example, you know, not to pick on them, but, you know, just use it. Fidelity is a good example of employees at Fidelity.
By the way, Jeff, for the purposes of this show, I enjoy picking on Fidelity.
Okay, fair enough. Well, so otherwise known as the other F word, in joking manner. But you know, Fidelity is being sued by its own employees for choosing its funds over any other fund. So that there's an easy way to, you know, pinpoint and sue as a class. But you know the normal mom and pop plan that has a menu of investment choices from major providers, you know, it's very, very difficult to find a case where there was, you know, self-interest or a lack of prudent expertise, because all of these vendors do an awful lot of job, a very good job of vetting the funds that are in there. They oftentimes bundle in there an additional ERISA 321. And so that's a plan fiduciary, an investment fiduciary. So there's a lot of additional protections for most employees and plan sponsors around their investment menu, though there's lots of things they still need to do. I mean, the place where they really get nailed, and just as you said, was the process. So one process on the investment side, staying there for a moment, is if you have a written investment policy statement. So the DOL auditors typically, our very first question is, let me see your investment policy statement. So that's a great place for a plan sponsor who's not paying attention, or, you know, an investment provider not really helping, leaving the plan sponsor with an investment policy statement that's never been adhered to. So put it in writing, guarantee, and not follow it, guarantee that you're exposing yourself to some liability. So that's a process step that if you're going to create a process like writing an investment policy statement, which, you know, you and I both would agree is a good prudent step, having one there that you don't follow is as bad as not having one at all.
And how often do you come across plans that don't have investment policy statements?
Good somewhere between 50 and 75% of the time.
Yeah, see, that's amazing to me, because, I mean, that roadmap in and of itself is going to serve as the outline of your process.
Well, and it's a good objective way for an employer to understand what's going on. Hey, you know, if Tommy's walking in my office helping me with my retirement plan, well, you know, part of that process should be, you know, why do we have these investment choices in our plan in the first place? How do we review them when we have to decide whether they should still be in there or not? So, I mean, that seems just like a very prudent step. Most plans, you know, again, anecdotally from my view, but all these many years, you just don't see it that often. It's, you know, the financial advisors who are really focused in this space absolutely do it. But there's a lot of amateurs, and the amateurs are the ones that expose their clients, and the client doesn't know, and the amateur didn't know either.
Yeah, I mean, we require all of our clients to have a financial or investment policy statement, because it's a great thing to have in your file, and it's a great tool to look to if you need to have questions answered.
Right on. And, you know, one of the things I see just on that step alone is that ones that are way too detailed. So, you know, overly detailing, you know, with really narrow criteria is a recipe for failure too. So it's,
yeah,
you know, it is artfully written. It gives some it's a parameter driven, not hyper specific. But that's one version. The other one, and the favorite one right now, and you started the show with it, is the notice process, adhering to your plan document. The ones we see really where the failures happen is not around the investment choices, but really around the operations of the plans, loans, distributions, how those are handled, notices being timely delivered, et cetera. Those are the, you know, adhering to your plan document. Those are very much the pieces that DOL looks at. Timely submission of payroll, something as fundamental as that, you know, easily identified, and ones that the DOL wants to look at and wants to see employers adhere to. And you know, because the DOL isn't, you know, people are not going to like me for saying it, they're not the bad guys.
they're actually the good guys looking out for the participants, and they do positively engage, in my experience, with plan sponsors to help them solve things. What they don't, you know, want to see is plans that aren't serving those participants.
So I'm the head of HR, or I'm the trustee of a 401k plan, and it's a role that I've assumed just because of my job title within a company, and I've got all these other tasks and responsibilities that I must take care of throughout my regular day: payroll, HR, you know, benefits, hiring, so on and so forth, and the list goes on and on and on. And so all of a sudden, I've got this big responsibility with regards to 401k plans. And I have to now add all these menial tasks to my day job of things that I may or may not even know. So I know you are a ERISA 316 plan administrator. And before we go to the break, can you define for me what that is? And then when we come back from break, I want to talk about the things that you can do to alleviate some of these menial tasks and take away some of that fiduciary liability from the HR directors, the CFOs, and other plan trustees.
Sure. The ERISA 316 plan administrator is the party named in a plan document as the plan administrator. Or, you know, if there's nobody named in the document as a plan administrator, then it is by definition the plan sponsor, and they are charged with choosing the service providers, making sure that the document is being adhered to, which means loans, distributions, hardships, all of those pieces. They sign the 5500, so they're the ones that are vested with all of the duties to operate the plan.
And so they basically take that role away from the actual administrator in the company.
Yeah. Well, the plan administrator is the party that's got the job. And so you know who isn't a plan administrator? That's probably the easier one. Is that we'll pick on them again? Is Fidelity. So Fidelity doesn't identify themselves as a plan administrator. Most providers do not identify themselves as plan administrator. They're service providers. They provide service to the plan administrator. The plan administrator is this named person in the plan document, which is usually the plan sponsor, and that plan administrator has all the duties to make sure that every one of the service providers are adhering to the plan document and processing loans and distributions and all the rest accurately in accordance with both the plan documents and the underlying law.
And when we come back, I want to talk about what that role is and why it's important to a company to really consider that role inside of a 401k, John. And so we're going to take a quick break, and you're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program with your host, Peter Whites, on Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With one out of every four 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Whites and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions using three proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost. Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. In Black and Whites, we win by not losing.
Stephen Douglas Associates, delivering talent, impacting results. Now celebrating 30 years of bringing top talent to some of the nation's most recognizable companies and private equity firms, whether they need highly qualified executives permanently or on a project basis. Recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing companies in America in 2012 and 2013. To learn more, visit us at www.stephendouglas.com.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Whites or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter@inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email peter@inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hi, welcome back. I'm your host, Peter Whites. Thanks for joining us. We're joined by John Starr, an ERISA attorney and a 401k plan administrator. And we were talking about a specific job title that John can take on under Rule ERISA 316. And he essentially becomes the plan administrator, the plan fiduciary, taking that role away from the company on behalf of the employees. And, you know, for those that listen, I mean, we always talk about painting a picture. I think the best way to describe what John's talking about is if you think about a look at a watch, a wristwatch, all you want to know is what time it is. But you don't necessarily know how it delivers that time. All the inner workings of the movements and inside of the watch and what are underneath the face of the watch, how it gets you to deliver that time. The role of the 316 is to make sure that the time is delivered to the plan participants, but yet John's role as this fiduciary is handling all those menial tasks that allow the watch to deliver the time. And so, John, I kind of want to walk through what some of those things are so that, you know, the HR leaders that are listening and the chief financial officer trustees are listening can realize how many menial tasks they actually have to perform to make this watch tell time.
Yeah, straight up. So first of all, let's just walk through the day of a plan. John, we have a group of employees who are going to be newly eligible for the plan, let's say April 1st. So, you know, first thing that needed to happen was to give those employees a notice about the plan, give them a copy of their summary plan description, and then, you know, to help process all the enrollment that takes place for those employees. So they're setting up their deferral rates, gathering their beneficiary designation forms, all of those pieces, and getting those set up both on their payroll side and then with their retirement plan vendor. Once John's in the plan, you know, if we have an automatic enrollment plan, maybe John doesn't want to be in the plan anymore. He didn't really pay attention to that notice. So now he needs to get pulled out of the plan because he said, hey, give me my money back, because they set up the plan as an IACA plan. So they could bring their dollars back out in the first 90 days. Then John is in the plan for a while, and today John wants to get a loan because he needs to do something, and the plan allows for a loan. So the plan sponsor, the administrator, the long-suffering HR manager, they're responsible for processing John's loan to make sure he's eligible for the loan. Then getting the promissory note to John, getting the check to John, and setting it up on the payroll side. But John, maybe he needs a hardship. Well, so today, John says, hey, I might be getting evicted from my home. So the plan sponsor has to decide, you know, does John actually have a hardship or not? And then, you know, as we go down in my world, you know, maybe he's got a domestic relation order. And so someone has to, at the plan sponsor level, the plan administrator, they have to determine whether or not that was in fact a qualified domestic relation order. So all of these things and all the testing and all the rest of the plan document, every single day, all those little nuances, all those little Swiss movements and cogs, that is directly, solely, and only the plan administrator's duty. So we take those direct duties away from all the ones we just listed. We would take those duties away from the plan sponsor, so they wouldn't have the responsibility. Now, every plan sponsor, Peter, wants to review these things. They want to see them. They want to know what's going on with their employees. And so we absolutely encourage that. But what they don't want to do is do them. They don't want to make the determination whether or not John's eligible for a hardship, because there's a lot of supporting documentation or a loan or who's eligible or processing somebody in
or out of the plan because of auto enrollment or some other eligibility condition. Those are all pieces that are directly incumbent on it. How about the other one that, you know, we have law changes all the time, Peter, and there's a lot of compliance law changes. So as the ERISA 316, we directly take the responsibility for amending clients' plans for compliance-related law changes. So there's lots of different things that happen in the day and life of a plan sponsor that they don't want to do, don't have the technical expertise to do, or the time or manpower. And so we take those duties away so they don't have to do them. But, you know, the biggest thing I think is, you know, when we take those duties away, that it isn't to create a middleman. It's to literally take the client out of the loop. And the biggest advantage we see out of being the ERISA 316 is our team of experts talk to the vendor's experts. And so we have subject matter experts working on behalf of the client, which is, I think, Peter, is the time that the client was looking for. I want my experts to do the job for me, and I want to make sure that I have the right things for my business and for my employees. That's how you know what time it is.
Well, I think that actually summed it up, because I'd imagine that most plan administrators, most, you know, directors of HR, CFOs and the like, don't know what they're supposed to do and not do. And so having
– Well, Peter, it's Animal House double secret probation. You don't know what you don't know. And
right.
There's a lot of things you don't know.
Yeah, and that's the interesting point. I mean, so to bring in someone, like you said, to have an expert talking to experts – you know, about things that require expertise, I think sum up the success of a plan. Do you have any data in your background or in the past about how a 316, having them on board, essentially what it does to eliminate any kind of violation inside of an audit?
Well, I wish I had that data. This role of a third party taking on the plan administrative duties is frankly relatively new. There's been some parties, you know, over time that have done it, but there hasn't been any good statistical data that we've seen yet to do it. And frankly, there's very few vendors or providers or administrators who are willing to take on those duties. I just attended a big conference where almost every one of the TPAs in the room had no idea what to do with this or what it meant to them. So I just think it's where the industry is going, because that's what clients and financial advisors want for their clients, is to be the subject matter experts and deliver it. But I have not seen yet any good statistical data on it.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I think what's important is to summarize what we've talked about today, John, and what's important is that, you know, there are fees and costs to running a plan, but those fees and costs have legitimate services that go with them. And there are a lot of protections that are designed to help both the participants in the plan as well as the corporations behind them to ensure that the participants have their best foot forward. And I can't thank you enough for being on today's show, John. I think this is a great topic. I think it's timely. I think it's going to come up a lot more often as we go. I'd love to tell you that I want to have you back in 4, 5, 6 months, because I want to find out what the landscape's changed from today to what it's going to look like 6 months from now, because I'm imagining you're going to be really busy. But short of that, I appreciate you being on the program.
Total pleasure, Peter.
I just want to tell you real quick, I'm going to post up on the blog at inblackandwhites.com some of the items that the menial tasks that John was talking about that are taken away from plan administrators and given to John when he takes on that 316 capacity. So feel free to go to inblackandwhites.com to view that. It's a pretty interesting slide. Also, make sure I posted a couple of John's comments on Twitter at Peter Whites, and feel free to join with me at LinkedIn at Peter Whites. I want to thank again John Starr from My Benefits for being a guest on the show. Next week on the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about employment and what the new job market looks like. I think that's going to tie in well with some of this retirement planning and benefits discussions that we've been having for the last several weeks. Thanks again for joining us. I'm going to leave you one interesting statistic on the way out. I saw this as well, and I'm a statistics guy for those of you that frequently listen, but think about it this way. the total number, and it ties in what John was saying, the total number of pages in the federal tax rules has increased by 34,000 pages since 1995. That's an increase of 5 pages every day, 365 days a year for the last 19 years. Think about that one. Anyway, thanks for being on the program. I'm Peter Weitz. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio show. Stay tuned for more exciting stuff on Voice America Business. Make it a great week.
Thank you again for tuning in to In Black and Whites. Please join your host, Peter Weitz, again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time and 7 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of the program on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a safe week. At 10 a.m. Eastern Time and 7 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of the program on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a safe week.